Welcome to the Serious Social Podcast, created by the straight-talking social media experts at Immediate Future.
The rapid rise of the de-influencer has disarmed brands. There are questions around reputation, relationships, and trust. In this episode, Katie Howell is joined by writers, influencers, and content creators Beck and Sam from Yellow Square to explore the topic.
Hello and welcome. We're back again for a Serious Social. Been a while. Delighted to have you here. This is a real Q&A style Serious Social today because we're going to be talking about de-influencing and how brands can deal with it. De-influencing is a really interesting trend that just feels like it came from nowhere around February and is now on TikTok alone is at 455 million hashtags. I mean, it's like, whoa, it's really taken off. And for many, the de-influencing trend is just a natural extension of what's going on with influencers, which is giving the good and the bad, the review, for want of a better word. And for others, it's a much greater kind of movement that sits behind sustainability, overconsumption, and all these things. But you don't want to hear from me. We want to talk about this, and we want to talk about how brands can deal with it. And to that end, I've got us some fabulous guests. I've got Beck Horsley and Sam Bartrop, both from Yellow Square, our influencers who are really well known for their comedy sketches on TikTok. And you've won loads of awards.
We've tried.
You have. I was looking at your website and thinking, oh my gosh, you've won the Euro Comedy Awards, the Laughter Labs, the BCG Pro Talent Awards. It's just like, wow. So thank you very much for joining us. We're also joined by our expert, Belle Lawrence, who knows pretty much everything about influencers and how brands can manage influencers. So the idea of today is that we can get into some of the meat around how brands can deal with de-influencing, how they should deal with it, but also let's widen this out because it's great to have this from the horse's mouth, to have Sam and Bex with us, because it gives us an opportunity to really talk about that relationship, because this is one of the biggest markets out there, which is the brands working with influencers, and we want to make the most of this. So how can we do this better? So Beck and Sam, tell us more about you and what your opinion of de-influencing is.
All right. Yeah. So, we're from Yellow Square. We're best known for our comedy sketches on TikTok, where we've got an audience of around, I think it's 275,000 at the moment, going up every day. So we have an audience based mainly in the UK.
Yeah. So it's mainly UK. We've got a 60-40 female-male split, 18 to 35. We've also got a 20% little slice in the US.
And yeah, we basically make comedy sketches for brands. That's like our job. So we love working with brands that we care about and that, you know, that we think offer a really good product or service, basically.
Yeah, definitely. We've also got background in screenwriting, live comedy and improv. So a bit of everything.
Bringing a bit of knowledge to things, hopefully. Yeah. But yeah, de-influencing. Well, I think it's a good thing in the sense that it challenges consumption. I think we all buy too much stuff. Anyway, and we could all do with just kind of being a bit more mindful about our choices. So I think in that sense, it's a positive thing. I mean, I wouldn't say it's something that we would do. You know, we prefer to kind of uplift and support brands that we care about rather than, like, you know, trash brands that we don't care about. We'd rather just not work with them.
Yeah, definitely. I think it could be seen as scary, but I don't think it is. I think it's more about like accountability from brands. And, you know, yeah, holding them accountable for their, you know, eco practices and being, you know, friendly to work with and helpful with that.
Belle, tell us a little bit about your background and de-influencing.
Yeah, so I look after the team at IF and we work with a whole range of clients and often want to work with influencers and content creators who add something to the brand's marketing effectively. And sometimes that's about creating great content that's going to engage people. And sometimes it's about getting extra reach. And sometimes it's about a bit of both. So it totally depends on what the sort of objective of the campaign is. But with the advent of de-influencing, I think it's quite interesting because it seems to be a little bit of a change in the creators and influencers themselves. So what Sam was saying there just about accountability, that maybe there's also this piece that influencers want to be seen as more trustworthy and more down to earth, like they're not just selling any old thing. In the same way as there's a bit of an advantage sometimes to creators and influencers sharing kind of behind the scenes or something that's more about their life with their audience because people want to know a bit more about them. This kind of breaks down the wall of that, you know, what might be seen as fake product reviews sometimes. So it's a bit of a shift in what creators are doing too.
Excellent. Well, listen, if you're watching live, do ask questions. But one question I have is de-influencing really, does it spell the end to influencer marketing in an industry that's worth apparently $16.4 billion last year? What do you guys think? Right, Sam.
Yeah, well, we certainly hope not because it's our livelihood.
Yeah, it's our career. So.
Oh, sorry. But yeah, no, I think it just, as you say, it just calls for more on authenticity from both brands and influencers. And for us, it's just about really making sure that we do our research and, you know, only working with brands that we care about and that, you know, that we'd want to promote to our audience, basically.
Mm, definitely. I think it's potentially a shift towards more long-term relationships rather than casting the net really wide and having loads of content creators who, you know, don't really know much about the brand and they are just trying to get a paycheck. So, you know, better relationships with content creators. If a campaign works well, then why not work with them again? You know, something's worked.
There's been a little accusation, though, that de-influencing is a bit of a fad and something that's another way to sell more product. And yeah, there are a few influencers who are jumping on that bandwagon. And I guess the big question is, are you seeing that trust in influence is declining on the consumer end, or is it not changed at all?
Is that for us? Sorry.
Yeah, we'd probably say that trust is probably getting better, especially trust between content creators and their audience, because, yeah, they are looking to their creators to know what to buy and what's you know, eco-friendly and sustainable. Yeah, I'd say probably more trust in the industry.
I agree. I think it's increasing. It's not sort of between the brands, the consumers. We as consumers are seeing the benefits of a more relatable use of a product. So, you know, whether it's tips and tricks or hacks or whatever, the brands wouldn't normally have previously shared that kind of stuff before. It's all very, you know, glossy presenting our USPs of the product, whereas this breaks down the walls. So actually people get to know the brand a bit better, maybe the product a bit better and feel more comfortable with it. So I think you're right, Sam, it's increasing trust.
I deliberately asked a few provocative questions up front, just to warm us up. For many brands working with influencers, sorry, I did warn everybody my dogs are going and off they go. For many brands working with influencers, it seems that, and you've mentioned it, authenticity, which is also, as I've pointed out earlier this week or last week, I hate the word authenticity. So, but what does it mean? And what is that important factor? How can authenticity be achieved between a brand and an influencer?
I think it's just about brands making sure that they do their research on who they want to work with and finding people who really, you know, represent the brand and they really believe in the brand's you know, goals and everything like that. It's just choosing a bit more carefully potentially who you're working with, and investing in a potentially a smaller pool of creators who you can really trust, and you can just build that trust and work together more regularly, as Sam said, like those long-term partnerships, which can be so mutually beneficial to both brand and creator as well.
Definitely. I think authenticity for us is you know, just being consistent. Like, we've worked a number of years to find our voice, to find our niche, and see what works for us. I think it's very clear when a creator loses their authenticity when they're creating an ad because it doesn't fit the rest of their content. Like these brands are going to these creators because of their content and how it does, how it performs. Like, we know our craft, you know, it needs to integrate perfectly with the creator and the brand. Otherwise it's very jarring and people will very quickly just like skip past.
Yeah. Well, from a brand perspective, again, I suspect this is where my dislike for word authenticity is run, is actually from a brand perspective. Where do you see it fitting and how is it better explained to brands?
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's kind of overused as a word, but at the same time, it is the right word and it is a valid word. But it just, we have to figure out as brands what that means to the brand. How can we be authentic? Does it mean breaking down the walls? Does it mean seeing behind the scenes? Or does it just mean being more honest about some of the flaws or some of the things that we're trying to fix as a brand? It can completely depend on what's going on with the brand at the time. But I think most brands are on the path now to really recognizing that what consumers want is not to be patronized, not to be sort of spoken down to, like, we're telling you this thing and you just have to believe us because we're a big brand, but just to be kind of, and to be understood for their challenges and the solutions that they need the brand or the product to fix for them and or help them fix. So they want to be heard and they want to be understood, and then they, yeah, don't patronize us, basically. It's what consumers are saying.
Yeah.
That's where you get that authenticity and sort of, you know, crack down on the no BS.
We've had a few comments. Hi, Natalie, who's from Manchester. Nice to meet you. Darren has got a question for us. Darren Jones has a question for us. I'm hopefully going to get it up on screen. Is the de-influencing trend more common on some platforms than others?
I think we've seen it a lot more on TikTok, have we?
Yeah,
I think obviously because TikTok is a bit more raw, you know, you do get honest opinions on there and less polished. So,
and I think also potentially it could be a bit of a reaction to the rise of TikTok Shop coming in and just kind of bombarding us on TikTok with, you know, like, here, buy this. And I do think, yeah, so people are kind of reacting to that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
with the influencing,
definitely. Yeah,
there's definitely a difference in how people present themselves on Instagram versus how they present themselves on TikTok and the sort of realities, and it's just much more grainy, I guess, and down to earth on TikTok. So it's probably where we're seeing more of it.
So we have another one from Amber, who's one of our team. Are users buying into subscriptions in general even more now than ever due to being de-influenced to gain access to trusted customer deals and content? I guess the kind of basis of that is there a reason why people are buying into the whole de-influence? They're enjoying the de-influencer trend,
or is it also, you know, thinking about getting the no ads, sort of subscribing to a platform or something where you can opt out of the ads and that kind of rubbish? It could be a trend that's all part of the de-influencing, or rather the other way around.
John Gray has said authenticity is trust, which I love, but we have a lovely question here from Carl. What do you think is the biggest strength of influencer advertising over traditional channels?
Don't mean to take that.
Yeah, you go.
I don't think it is a case of over. I think everything needs to be in the mix, and working with influencers and content creators, you know, it is a bit different. We are talking about doing things differently for a brand and perhaps not making it quite so polished. So the strength is in breaking down that wall and trying to get something that's a bit less overproduced and that can be more relatable. What do you guys think?
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, using influencers is just, it's sort of, obviously you're getting into their audience. So if you work with influencers who have an audience space where, you know, that matches yours, then that's that's incredible. And you're using that relationship that the influencer has with their followers, and there's so much trust there. Mm. So I do think that it you know, it's still completely, yeah, it's just only going to get better and better, really, and that trust builds.
Yeah, mm. Absolutely.
Oh, that's me. Sorry. Throwing up. I've just lost all my comments and disappeared. Sorry. Technology just went a bit flaky on me there, which is why I disappeared and came back.
Just popped out.
That's all right.
I have no idea what anybody else has said to me.
That's all right. We're up to date, actually. So we can,
yeah.
Might be. So I'll get on to my next question, because I think we're getting into the meat of this, which is, it's actually not about de-influencing. It's actually about how brands work with influencers. And last year, WARC, which is WARC, unveiled a really stark disconnect between how brands and influencers perceive a mutually beneficial partnership. And I love that word, mutually beneficial partnership. We're not buying your time. It's about that growth and partnership. So how do you, Sam Beck, like to manage expectations and relationships with brands?
Yeah, so I think that the one of the main things is making sure that at the beginning, you know, everybody's intentions are clear, so that the brand makes it very clear what they want from this, you know, this collaboration. And just to kind of just be really straightforward with their deliverables, you know, what do they want? Like, where are they going to use this video, for example? If they're asking for a video, where are they going to use it? Where's it going to go?
Consistency with that as well. We've definitely had some campaigns where deliverables were put forward and then you get to the contract and then it's slightly
they've
different.
Snuck a few more in there.
And then that's the trust thing that,
yeah,
that is maybe
questioned. Yeah, you want to be just open, honest, just communicative. Be really clear in the brief as well, like if you are providing a brief, and making sure that you're kind of, if there are things that you want to include in this, in the video, like USPs or whatever, and you definitely want to include them, or you definitely want to include like a certain shot of the product, or of, make that clear early on, just to make life easier for the content creators a little bit down the line, when it, you know, rather than go back and doing like reshoots or something like that. So yeah, we like to kind of just make sure that we're being very open with everything. We like to make sure everyone's really happy with, you know, in the negotiation stage, yeah, like
transparency,
to be transparent about our fees, and for them to be transparent about their budget. It's just a very kind of, and we want everybody to be happy, and we want everybody to feel like they've got a good deal.
Definitely.
So that we can have a really strong working relationship.
Yeah.
And signing off the script, signing off the draft video, offering to do reshoots, you know, if they're not happy, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah,
rarely happens.
Yeah. And also I'd say, like, you know, trust us.
Yeah.
Like, this is our channel, like, we know what works, that you know, we'll make something that works. Sometimes we've had a few campaigns where it's been, you know, hit this, and then you kind of lose that authenticity, because then it's very clear that you're just, you know, reading from a script, or
yeah, know. Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's spot on. I love that Amber has written. I love that Beck mentioned a clear brief, and I would argue that is the best starting point. Is and that isn't being overly prescriptive either. I think we talked last time, which is not to tell you everything you need to do and where, how many times you need to mention the brand and all that sort of stuff. Rather, allow you to be treated as a collaborative partnership. Do you have any examples of where you've had super relationships with a brand?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think one of our strongest is we have ongoing relationships with Squeaky Bean and Plant Based News as well. Plant Based News, we give them deliver like UGC content every month, pretty much, for their channel. But Squeaky Bean, that's a plant based food brand, and basically we started working with them in 2021 because we did this Squeaky House, which was the world's first vegan content house. But they gave us a lot of creative control, didn't they?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That was an example of, like, they set their boundaries. They said what they wanted from us, but then we went above and beyond.
Because we wanted to.
Yeah, because they gave us so much freedom. You know, they chose us specifically for what for what we do.
Yeah.
So we wanted to make, we created loads of content. I think the guidelines were like one a week, and we ended up doing a video every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were in this content creation house for about 3 weeks. And also, like, what a huge risk for a brand to do. Like,
yeah, it was a big move.
It was huge. And that's just really exciting. And people, yeah. People feed into that.
Mm. And they just created a really friendly, like, collaborative environment. We were collaborating with other creators. We were given all the tools that we needed to thrive. And they just said, fly, my pretty. And we flew.
Yeah, absolutely. We met everyone top to bottom, like,
oh,
we knew them as a brand, we knew you know, the founders and the marketing people, like, we knew who they were. They weren't just sort of a faceless organization.
Yeah,
like that was quite important as well. You know who you're talking to when you DM them and stuff.
Yeah. And also, since then, you know, we've worked with them a whole bunch of times, and, you know, they always come to us first for content. You know, they don't spread their net like really wide. They come back to the sort of core creators, and they even like send us their products and things. Even if they don't want a video from us, they'll just send us their products in the post just to try, and they don't expect anything from that. Like, but, you know, we will often post about it, like put it on our stories or whatever, because we believe in the brand, we love the brand, and we love them.
Yeah,
love you,
definitely.
Squeaky Bean.
Definitely.
I love that. It's the belief in the brand, it's the collaboration and the closeness of the relationship that you have that bonds. But Belle, you worked on some of the Squeaky Bean stuff, well, certainly the house with one of our other brands, didn't you?
Yeah we got involved with Mission Wraps at the same time. We were sort of on and off working with one of the other creators, Ollie El Burrito Monster, who went in the house with Beck and Sam. So we were working with him on and off the summer previous to that, and we actually then started creating a couple of recipes with Squeaky Bean as ingredients, and then sort of built that relationship from there, really, and ended up it all kind of come together. All the wraps went into the house, and the content was just, like Beck Sam said, it was like above and beyond. We weren't expecting quite as much to come out of it as did, and it was just very valuable. I think what made the difference between what we've seen before, maybe from other brands, is that, as you say, you guys say that you met them from top to bottom and you understood what their values were, what they were trying to achieve and what they really believed in. And you could really tell that they'd picked and chosen content creators who totally believed in that as well, and, you know, wanted to bring that to the fore. So it wasn't just, here's a recipe because I'm a chef or a cook. It was, we believe in this product and everyone should be thinking about it and trying it because, and you could so see all of that coming through in the posts and the content.
Definitely. Yeah, I'd also add as well, they weren't just food, because obviously they're a food brand. They weren't just like food creators.
So they were really open-minded, actually, which was one of our tips for brands. Like, just because you're, you know, a beauty product doesn't mean you just have to work with beauty creators, for example.
Yeah, you could work with comedy creators, because we can make a sketch about anything, you know. And
so the house was, it had a couple of food creators, and then it had like a prankster. It had, you know, us doing comedy. And then a vegan blogger as well.
Yeah.
It was a real mix of sort of skills and stuff. Oh, and then like a lifestyle blogger as well. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Because then you're getting all the audiences. You know?
Exactly. It's the best way to kind of build on not just saying people who are following a food brand because they're a foodie, but going into all the different reasons why someone might choose that brand. Maybe it's because they're entertaining and funny, or maybe it's because they have a specific value around plant-based food or whatever environment, for example. But it helps you. It helps a brand get into all those different audiences by widening the net.
Definitely.
We have a great question here from Stephen, my favorite journalist. I'm hoping this will pop up. Oh, there we are. Hi, Stephen. Are brands more nervous now they realize there could be repercussions of being called out? Is their behavior towards influencers improving?
I'd
hope so.
I think it would hope that it's sort of just causing brands to just be a little bit more mindful, yeah, about what they're offering, and potentially, you know, look again at their, if they're, you know, charging a really high price point or something and it's a bit unfair, then thinking about that, or
sustainability
like, yeah,
yeah, like we mentioned as well, like accountability, you know, you should be held accountable for what your practices.
Yeah, I definitely think that as an influencer, like content creator, we would be mindful about the brands that we worked with, do you know what I mean, because we would be nervous to work with a brand which, you know, wasn't
yeah,
doing
totally
much good in the world or whatever.
Absolutely. And I guess it, yeah, we are held accountable as content creators as well to work with the right brands, so it yeah. is, it's, you know.
Yeah, like, so for example, if we did, like, I mean, our brand is quite sort of, yeah, vegan friendly and everything like that. So if we were to work with a you know, a hamburger brand, that would just call into question our authenticity.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'd probably get some flack from, you know, our plant-based followers. So, yeah, definitely. Just something to be mindful about. Yeah.
I think brands are probably a bit more nervous, actually. And I think that's because they have to work harder. You know, they are going to be held accountable, and they have to be able to back up what they say. And whether that is a claim about what a product can do, or whether it's their ethics and what they stand for, they have to be able to back it up internally. It's you know, we've seen too much greenwashing and, you know, overdoing it when it comes to talking about diversity, when they're not really representing themselves very well. And there's just even more, as the years go on, there are no places to hide, particularly with influencers and content creators who should be able to choose what they're saying. If they choose to call you out, yeah, you should be nervous.
Totally. Be scared.
Before we go on to the next set of questions, I just have to put this one up.
Thank you.
I don't know who Serious Face is, but that is so sweet.
There are new best friends. Serious Face creating very good audio sketches at the moment that are going out fortnightly.
Yeah.
Fabulous. So let me just check and see if there are any other core questions. One second, sorry. No, I think we've done most of those. Let me go back to this, because we've talked a lot about relationships and it being a two-way street. But one of the things you mentioned, which has come up in the topics, both at Shantz, our art director, has said, yes, a good brief. What makes a good brief from a agency perspective? And then Sam Betts, love to know what you think about the brief, because it's the nitty-gritty of this, isn't it?
Yeah, it's both being detailed and also not over prescriptive, which is a bit of a challenge, but yeah, the people who can write a great brief are really highly valued. I think I mentioned values earlier. You kind of need to start there with what a brand really values, what they value from their creators, and then understanding, doing your research about the creators you want to work with. Beck mentioned it earlier, you know, understand their creative style, understand the way that they operate and what their values are first. You know, have a chat to them, maybe. I mean, seems shocking. Don't just email and say, here's a brief, maybe have a chat. It seems really simple. And then start putting together some kind of clearly defined what we want to do. Here are our goals. Here's the kind of audience that we would like to reach. Here's the tone of voice that we tend to go with. Here's the visual identity we tend to use. And I'm saying this in a specific way, because you can say, here's our visual identity. But sometimes it could be too prescriptive, or it might be something that the content creators feel like, well, we'd never use that thing in here. We'd never use that word. And that could create a clash immediately. So it should all be kind of open for discussion, really. And then I think setting the boundaries is really important, letting them know how far they can go. How far can they push it? Can they be bold? Can they be provocative? Can they be funny about it? Like, where are the guidelines of that? Where can they have fun with it? And then what are the things that we must have, or the things that we definitely don't want? And if there are brands who haven't really ever got into the nitty-gritty of that, it's definitely worth it, because actually it informs most of the content that you create, not just when you work with influencers and content creators. So it's what you want to do is iron out as many niggles as possible so that you kind of have a way to bulletproof your ideas and both sides are really confident in what they're going to go and create, and then talk all the time. It's got to be that collaborative process. So you're not really just writing a brief. It's not kind of saying, here are the guidelines to write a great brief. It's briefing. The whole process is a briefing process that should be back and forth and collaborative.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Yeah, yeah. Totally I think agree. Responsiveness is important as well.
I think some of the best briefs that we've received as well have been personalised, actually. So they would even have like screenshots of our work and, you know, something a bit similar to this, but, you know, not quite like this. Mm. We've had like specific ones with our names in them, which has, you know, made us feel very special.
Yeah.
But it just shows that the brand's done their research and they actually want to work with you rather than just, you know, emailing a bunch of creators and, yeah, and hoping that somebody bites.
Definitely.
It's just
it's
lovely
not just
to get
based on
that.
Your numbers as well. They're not just seeing you as like your follower account. It's
yeah.
Like, and also like you said, like deep diving and like Belle, you said as well, like knowing the content creator, like if there's a format that they use regularly, like chuck your ad into that.
Yeah.
You know, we've had that before. It's like we do videos where it's like caught watching Friends, ironically, and we've had brands that want to use that format and change it slightly, which is great because it works, because TikTok is format based. It's like repeated things.
And I think, as you say, like just get in the key information, but be concise with it, but make sure that you're just, if there's anything you definitely feel like you want in there, get it in there.
Yeah. At the beginning,
but also be flexible and just trust the creator. Let the creator interpret the brief and come to you with a suggestion. If they've got an idea, just listen to them.
Yeah,
you know, because they, you know, they know what works on their channel. So, like, as long as it's kind of encompassing those brand values and, you know, your main points or whatever you want to get across, then you could do it. Yeah, it would be good to just listen a little bit to the creator as well. Just collaborate.
I also like what Belle said about jumping on a call. Like,
yeah,
that's great. We've had that a couple of times and it's great because you really get a vibe of of what they want and they get a vibe of you and stuff like that. So it's a good way to communicate a brief as well.
Yeah, it sounds so basic, doesn't it? Because it's relationships. We're basically not a media buy. We're not buying media, and I think that's where, and it, John Gray has just come up with a great question, which I think, because we've switched between the kind of wording, which is, do you view yourselves as content creators or influencers? What do you think is the difference?
That's a very good question, John.
Yeah, very good question. I think we would call ourselves content creators. We do comedy, and we're actually comedians outside of TikTok as well. And we're screenwriters. So it's like we're actually writer performers slash content creators. But I think the difference is that we want our videos to be funny first, entertaining first, and then an ad later if it's an ad. Do you know what I mean? Like, our mission is to entertain and, you know, just make people laugh.
Yeah.
And totally. It just happens to be an ad. I think, obviously, you know, technically, I suppose we are influencers. You know, we use our page to influence, but we try and influence for the good, you know. And I suppose with influencer, there's just a little bit of a stereotypical, like a stigma even around the word, isn't there, of that stereotypical influencer. Obviously they're doing their thing, that's not really our style, but that just, you know, to camera, like, you know, here's a pen, it's really good. buy it now.
And that's the trust thing. I feel like if you're seeing these sort of stereotypical, you know, here's a pen, then you're not going to trust that as much. Whereas if you see it within that person's style, then you are going to trust it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really good point. We do try and push towards conquering content creators.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do.
It's interesting to see like the interconnection there when Katie mentioned about media buying and we're talking about content creation, because for a lot of agencies and brands, they're kind of more used to working with maybe creators who are more in the sort of production side of things, and they're thinking about them from, there's a director or a producer or a writer who's written this ad, who's creating this thing, and they put influencers and social media content creators in the same box and try and work with them in the same way. And then sometimes there's this who's in control element, and that's where brands can fall down because they'll try and control it too much, like they would for a TV ad, and it's totally not the same. But I guess that sort of transition from the old sort of way of doing celebrity endorsements, TV ads and stuff in that still happens now has moved into social, and that it's not only celebrities, it's just normal people creating great content because they're entertaining and talented. It's totally different from saying, here's Mr. Celebrity, please sell this product in our TV ads.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because in that sense, they're more of actors and they're being given a script, whereas we are creating the script.
And like, we have definitely had campaigns which are like that. They almost provide a script and you're like, well, no, that's not going to work on our page. So, again, just like having that communication and stuff.
Definitely. I think it's a really interesting point because 20 years ago when we launched Immediate Future, there was no Facebook. There was just about Twitter, which was mostly about free text messaging back in the day when they charged for texting. And we worked for Sony Europe, who ran a series of TV commercials. This is how basic it was. And we used to do a thing called blogger relations because there was no influencers back then, but they effectively were exactly the same. But because it was so new and because bloggers wrote long form content, the bloggers we involved were involved in the whole process. So the most famous ad is the TV promotion for Bravia TVs, where there's a whole series of little rubber balls thrown down streets in San Francisco with some great music to it, is having the bloggers present doing almost the behind the scenes to this. And it kind of, as that took off, the bloggers became commoditized and therefore the influencers became that either celebrity bucket or commodity bucket. And now we've shifted into this, back to this creator talent pool, as opposed to you're just going to put this thing out and say something nice about it, which is just, I think it's brilliant. It's so much better. Stephen's come back with another question, which we have to ask because I think this is super. How do you keep aware as creators and push back against brands you feel might be trying to greenwash to some extent? I mean, I think this is a really, how do you stick to your own ethics?
Yeah, so it's just basically, you know, we don't take every brand deal that comes in. We just do our research on the brands that want to work with us, and we kind of make a decision based on that, really. If it aligns with our personal ethics and things like that, then, you know, we'll have a chat, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. We'll just put it on side.
I think because we are selective of who we work with, and also brands are selective with who they work with as well. So we don't really come across that, like any brands that are trying to push something that we wouldn't want to say, because we wouldn't get to that stage. I guess it's just being selective at the beginning with the brand, because and us researching the brand as well.
It's kind of you knowing your own values as well, isn't it? I mean, I know you're a business like they're a business, but ultimately you have your own value set that you want to stick to.
Definitely,
I was going to say, it's just another question. People are the questions are rolling in now. Do you think de-influencing could put smaller brands off investing in influencers in case they don't like their products or services, potentially damaging the small brand rep? I don't know. I feel like we've kind of almost covered this, because that would not be the case if you had a relationship.
Definitely. I do feel like as well, like smaller brands are, if they're new as well, they will tend towards being more eco-friendly anyway. Like, you know, it's probably the older brands that don't have the right practices. So if you're coming from a small place, then you're probably gonna do it properly.
Yeah.
At this point,
it's probably tempting as a smaller new brand to say, I know what we'll do. We'll get a bunch of cheap influencers to talk about the product. But if you're going about things the right way, I would say mostly just going out and grabbing some influencers and content creators is probably a mistake, and you should probably do some focus groups and checking in with your audience and talking to the people who've actually starting to buy the product first, so that you've got enough of a backup and you've actually tested it with some people before you get others to start hopefully endorsing it.
So from your perspective, what would be Sam and Bell, and Bell, what would be your perspective on sort of the three things that brands should have in mind when they approach a content creator? What would be the most important things that they should think about?
I'd say the first thing, you know, to start at the very beginning is to have, as I mentioned before, just have that personal approach. So we've had emails from brands before, which have been like, you know, CC everyone, all the content creators under the sun. And then you're in this thread with a whole bunch of other content creators. And it's just like, oh, dear.
Yeah, that
someone
was,
made a mistake.
That was pretty dramatic, actually, yeah. Because the influencers started emailing back saying, like, you know, you've just given away my yeah. information. And I think some people were coming in with fees. And
So it's just a bit, yeah. So basically just do research and choose your creators wisely based on your own, you know, brand values and everything. And then just make the email, the reach out email or the first contact, just make it personal.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe say something you like about their content. Why do you want to work with this particular influencer?
Yeah, and make the brief bespoke. Like, it's probably a bit of extra work, but like, you know, make it specific to that creator.
Was that number one? Number two,
yeah.
Creative control, like just trust the influencer as well. And just, you know, they can just obviously just work together and sort of come to a happy medium.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
What else would
pay,
you say?
I'd say pay fairly, I think.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
No, no, I was going to say another one, but that's a really good point.
Oh, we have to have four then. Sorry.
We are going to have four.
Yeah.
That's because you have a lot of brands, and I do understand that obviously small businesses don't have much of a budget, but obviously it's a balance between this being like some people's livelihoods as well, making content for people. So when you are offered a brand deal and it's just a gifted opportunity, like, it's a very, we don't have the time to take on necessarily that kind of opportunity as much as we might want to, just because, you know, we've got to pay rent.
Yeah, there's
time is money.
Well. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, we could spend that time with a paid opportunity. So it's like,
yeah,
it's tricky.
It is tricky. And I just did want to say about long-term relationships, because that is something that I really think that both brand and influencer can benefit from, just working together more often with like a potentially a smaller pool of creators that you just really trust.
Yeah.
Before I go to Bell, I would also add something John has brought up, John Gray has brought up in the comments, which is pay quickly. One of the things that I think is pretty poor practice from brands or other agencies is then delaying payment, because in a way you're like any freelancer consultant, that you don't have a bank of reserves cash sitting there. Payroll is whatever gets invoiced and sent back. And if it takes them 90 days to send it back, that could be the difference between paying the rent and not paying the rent. So I have a very strong view about how we pay people who are smaller businesses. So
yeah,
definitely. Yeah.
Also, if it makes it just a bit icky, if you're having to chase up payments, it's extra admin for us, and it just makes it a little bit icky.
Yeah, absolutely. We're quite lucky because we've signed with an agency, Stride Social, and they do that for us.
Yeah, so manage our brand relationships. So that's nice.
Yeah, so we can focus on the creation part of it. But yeah.
I'll just say we had this experience with an escape room company recently, and they ticked every single box. Like, they'd done their research. It was a very personal approach. They'd come to us with a whole list of ideas for content and stuff. But then it turned out at the end of this, like, you know, 2-hour Zoom chat where we're all really excited about working together, they had no budget. So it was just like, okay.
Yeah, it was a real shame. I don't quite know what they thought we were going to get out of it. Maybe a free escape room, but like
exposure.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just had exposure. To say it.
Yeah, I think that was it. But yeah.
Well, if it's any consolation, as an agency, we occasionally get asked to do stuff for free as well.
That's not just us then.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
People do try.
There's always somebody willing to chance their arm, isn't it? Val, yeah. what are your tips, your three kind of tips for brands?
Well, a lot of it's probably been covered, but for brands, I think it has to be not about buying. It's not about a commodity that we're buying. It's a collaboration. That's probably point one. And brands need to be prepared to compromise. They need to be open-minded and not just control freaks about it, because it just won't work. If you have that in the business, if you have that in the leadership, if there's somebody who's going to be a blocker because they're controlling or trying to control too much about the brand perception or whatever it is, it won't work. So fix that first. And then try and stay both positive and audience first. So yes, we're talking about the brand values and what they want to get out of it. And we're talking about the content creators and what they want to make sure that they're doing for their style. But we can't forget the audience at the end, that it has to be what they need to see from a brand or what they want to see from a content creator and what they'll enjoy. So we've got to put audience mindset back into it as well.
And at the top of the live, you guys talked a little bit about what you do, but I love your point about being content creators. So what do you see as a business that you offer brands? What is your package, so to speak?
Yeah, well, we offer just the full service, really, from, you know, like ideation to the produced video and posting at the end. You know, as we said, like we're actually comedians as well, and we're script writers, so we actually bring a lot of knowledge to this, and we can sort of promote and sell products and services in a really funny, authentic way, which just fits into TikTok as a comedy sketch. It doesn't even seem like an ad.
Yeah.
Which is just something a bit different that, you know, a lot of brands that we work with haven't even thought about. They're like, oh, could we promote this with a comedy sketch?
And yeah, Bulldog.
They're like, yes, you can.
Yeah. Touch Food, Toblerone, like EE.
Yeah. And something shareable as well. Just creating content that's just shareable and enjoyable first. And then, yeah, as I said, like an ad later.
Definitely. I think also we've got real deep knowledge of TikTok and how to navigate TikTok. We've been down in the trenches for like 3-4 years now, every day. And yeah, it does change quite a lot. Algorithms change. I think we're also offering the insight into that. But also on a practical basis, we also offer UGC as well.
And also we're here for like ideas bouncing around. We do that with a few companies, and if they just want the scripts, they just want the scripts. Like, just, you know, we can help in any way.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love it. And it is so creative, and it is looking at that different angle. It's giving a voice to brands. We're almost there at the end. We're kind of running out of time, but I want to wrap up with asking you, all of you, what you think might change, if anything, nothing might change, between brands and content creators now that de-influencing is here to stay?
I just think that potentially brands will be investing more in, as I said, like a smaller number of influencers. And I think that influencers, like speaking from that perspective, we just might be a bit more choosy about who we're working with. And just, yeah. So essentially brands, just like pull your socks up a little bit in terms of like making sure that you're offering a good product, and you're mindful about your impact, your environmental impact, things like that.
Definitely. Yeah. Like we said, again, accountability. It's like, you know, before you make any moves, it needs to be, you know, the right move.
Belle, have you got anything to add?
Yeah, I think I agree. This is the de-influencing thing, and generally the evolution and I guess maturing of the influencer industry is hopefully going to make brands a little bit more careful in how they do things and what they do. And it's also helping content creators to be a bit more choosy as Beck said, and a bit more careful about what they're willing to promote. So it's not kind of just blind validation and then brands don't get caught out. And ultimately we get back to that word of authenticity, because then if the brands are more careful, the creators are more careful, the audience get a better experience.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. And this LinkedIn user has just said what I was just about to say, which is, it's quality over quantity for sure. And I tend to agree. What I'm hearing throughout this is deeper relationships, more collaboration, fewer relationships, but longer relationships that actually have meaning and matter to both the brand and the creator. So thank you so much, Sam, Beck, Belle.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
It's been fantastic. We will have another Serious Social Live. We don't have a date on that yet, but we will be coming back on a regular basis to annoy you on a Thursday or Friday morning. So thank you very much for everybody who asked questions. That's fabulous. We got so many comments. It's brilliant. And again, thank you all.
If you're after more know-how to break the social boring, subscribe now and check out show notes for links to our website and social profiles.